Is Mike on?
Episode 98. What's wrong with Orny Adams? I want to live a life without a to-do list. I am so sick of to-dos that I just wanted to don't. I don't want to do them. Every day I wake up and I'm face-to-face with a to-do list. I'm confronted. I'm up in the middle of the night thinking of things I have to do. There's so many things every day. And if you complete everything one day, the next day it fills up again. There's just no end to a to-do. You know what I want? I want a to-do list that has one thing, one little box, and it just says, be bored. Be bored. That's what I want. What's Wrong with Orny Adams, episode 98. We're playing Mark Mann's theme. A little loud there. Mark Mann is coming to my shows this weekend at the Irvine Improv, so we're playing his theme. Thanks, Mark. Yeah. That's another to-do, Irvine Improv. Another to-do. On the show today, bringing this down, a letter from a 99-year-old fan. And what's wrong with those water bottle filling stations? I cover the Love Has One doc, the Garden doc, and what is fexting? It's ruining your relationships, most likely, and technology is watching you. It's everywhere. It's in here. We're being watched nonstop. And now in New York City, they want to install cameras that monitor the sound. And so if you're violating sound or being too loud, you'll get a ticket, which scares the hell out of me because I'm loud. I'm very loud. I got to show you these pictures. When I was traveling back to Boston this weekend, or over Thanksgiving, rather, you know, I'm so sick of traveling. First of all, look at this guy walking on the plane. And when you're seated and people walk by you, they're at waist level. And this guy is walking by me with his zipper open, like completely open. It's not even like halfway. This feels intentional. But this is what I really wanted to discuss. Now that we're all so conscious of water and the earth and preserving, which I think is great, they have these water stations all over the place where you can fill up, you can bring your own bottle and fill it up. And the problem is people bring gigantic containers. Look at this guy. Now, you can't even tell from the picture, but this is probably 75 gallons of water. You have to sit there while this guy fills it up. And it dispenses like 12 ounces at a time, so it stops. He's got to remove it from the sensor, put it back in front of the sensor, and the line is getting longer. He's not even looking back like, sorry. He doesn't even think it's unreasonable. Like, is he going on a 30-day flight? This is at the airport. Is he going on a 30-day flight? Here's the other thing I've noticed about these water filling stations. And they're starting to remove them. They have lights to show you how clean the filter is. Like green, go, obviously. Yellow, uh-oh. Almost time to clean the filter. And then there is red. And I notice at the gym and at the airport, it's red a lot. So would you rather have unfiltered water that has some impurities but has been fine for people for, you know, hundreds of years, or however long we've been pumping water through pipes? Or would you rather have water that has some impurities and now is being pushed through a filter that has collected a lot of impurities? That's my question. But the line, you know, you're late for your flight. You just want to make your flight. And then you got this guy. Now look at this guy. He's got three bottles. Probably has a family. Does everybody in the family need their own water bottle? Like, there was a time nobody carried water with them. Now, it's like we're all prepared for the apocalypse, I guess, which is a theme of this podcast because I'm going to cover two documentaries. One is called Love Has Won, and the other one is about people living off the grid, and it's called The Garden. And, you know, all these documentaries, everything's based on fear. Fear and conspiracy theories and all that sort of stuff. And so I'm going to get into that in a minute, but I just want to tell one more story about when I was flying. I saw something, I said something, and nobody did anything. Nobody seemed to care. I was at LAX. I was going through TSA pre-check, and a guy walked through the metal detectors because they don't, when you're pre-check, I know in the other security section, they have some scanner where you put your hands up in it, and it measures the size of your junk. It looks for, I don't know what it looks for. I don't think any of this stuff does anything. I think the water bottle people, the food people, they're probably behind it because you can't bring food and I brought overnight oats, and this is actually makes it actually funnier, this story. It had to be inspected by two people, the overnight oats. The overnight oats in a closed package had to be inspected because that's dangerous. So I think the food people, they want these things up. Certainly the bottled water people, because I used to bring a bottle of water with me. Now you can't. Now you can't, because that's a danger. That's a danger. And believe me, I'm all for safety. I fly all the time. And it's scary because I'm reading articles now about, you know, the people, the air traffic controller people, they're so overworked, they're falling asleep. They're showing up, they're drinking on the job. It's scary enough flying. So I'm for security, but I just can't believe that TSA is even that effective. I know they've done studies where people are getting guns through. Well, I saw a guy walk through the metal detector right behind me, and he gets to the belt to grab his bag, but before he does, pulls a phone out of his pocket. The phone was in his pocket. Now, shouldn't that have set off the metal detectors? I would think so. So I thought, should I say something? And I thought, you know, I want to go get on my plane. I don't want to fill out a form. I don't want to have to give my name. I don't, you know, maybe they save me for my picture and put it in a file. I don't know. So I find a supervisor and I explain to him what I just saw. And guess what? He could care less. Is it all a front? Is it all a front? Like, I'm not going to be encouraged to see something, say something, if nobody cares. We live in a world where nobody cares anymore about anything. That's why I'm exhausted. That's why to-do lists are so difficult now, because nobody cares. Nobody cares. How many times do I have to send an email or a text to the same people I'm doing business with just to get a simple answer? Why can't we get simple answers anymore? Why have we stopped calling customer service? Because we're fatigued. Because it's ineffective. We have to talk to some stupid robot first that could care less. That of course the robot doesn't care, but it's the system is purposely ineffective to exhaust us. And I'm here to say, I'm exhausted. You used to be able to, like, let's think of an example. Let's say, I've talked about my last specials. Your cable bill goes up. That used to be a simple phone call. It's not a simple phone call anymore. It's an exhausting phone call. You know, what if you're overcharged on a hospital bill or something? Battling this stuff is exhausting. And they know it. And they're beating us down and beating us down. And believe me, I'm not into conspiracy theories. I wish it wasn't like this. I wish life was simpler again. My cult is the no to-do list cult, where we don't do anything. We just wake up and we do what we want to do that day. See, when I'm done with this, I'll just give you an example of some of my to-dos today. I have to get my merch ready for my shows at the Irvine Improv this weekend. So let me get this out of the way. I'll be at the Irvine Improv this weekend, December 8th through 10th, and I've got 5 shows and it's selling well. So now I feel good about that. But I've got to get my merch together. I do most of this myself. I went downtown yesterday and picked up the merch. Then I have a couple of voiceover auditions I have to do. And then I have some cameos. People order cameos, these videos. I've got to do that. Then I've got to edit this video. And it's a lot. And I'm overwhelmed. So I want to wake up in my utopian society called the no-to-do list and do what I want to do. If that means pick berries that day or work on my shack or whatever, my root cellar, whatever I live in, then that's what I want to do. I'm fatigued. I'm to-do list fatigued. That's all. And I think we all are. There's no daily regimen. I don't know. There's no rhythm to life anymore. That's what's wrong. There's no rhythm to life anymore. You know, we own a house. It's a to-do list every day. You think you're done. You think, you know, yesterday I was installing some security cameras. I thought I was done. And then I noticed, oh, look, the moles have eaten up the yard again. So I have to deal with that. And then I thought I was done. And then I went inside. And I know this sounds ridiculous. And I just want to sit down with nothing to do. And then I noticed that the pump soap in the kitchen was out of soap. So now I got to go find that soap and fill that thing up. Well, if I'm going to fill that up, now I'm going to fill up the one in the bedroom, in the bathroom, in the office, you know, like, and it becomes to do, to do, to do. And I can't relax unless everything is done. I like everything in order. So that's my own issue. Now, over Thanksgiving, I talked about how, there are these leaves that go on the table. I want to call them sleeves, but I think they're leaves. And I'm constantly being asked by my parents, when do you want to put the leaves on the table? Because there's going to be more guests. So we expand the dining room table and put these. I hate it more than anything. And I think I was home the first night it got mentioned. The next morning when I woke up, which is the day before Thanksgiving, it got mentioned. Or actually, that was the Tuesday before. Anyway, it happened three times. Finally, I just did it. But I'm here to report that I did carve the turkey. And I got zero stains on my shirt. I wore a very big, bib. What am I, a kid? Apron. And I went splatter free. And it was great. It was great. The turkey this year was not good. It was a C+. I don't know. We didn't cook it. We bought it pre-cooked. And we're going to stop doing that, I think. I'll let you know when the official vote happens. But this is what listeners wrote in. Because I posted that video about me getting oil stains and how do you get it out of the shirt. Everybody had a suggestion. Let me tell you how you get an oil stain out of a shirt. You buy a new shirt. That's it. This is what listeners said. One said, if you sprinkle some talcum powder on an oil stain, kind of rub it a little bit, let it sit for a while, and then launder as usual. I don't think that would work. Then this person says, baking soda should work, BTW. Somebody else said, use Dawn. And then this woman, this is under a YouTube video, I think, Francine wrote, I hate that oil too, OA, so I rub a piece of dry white chalk on it. Now, who has chalk? What adult has chalk that doesn't have kids? So now I have to keep chalk on hand? Then the chalk usually dries up in the oil, and washed, usually it's totally gone. No mark. I say usually because it works for me. Hope you try it. I hope I never get another oil stain. Or how about this? I carve in a shirt I don't care about, and then I change back. You know, I'll be like, Taylor Swift. I'll have multiple outfit changes for my turkey carving. That's what I'll do. I hope everybody had a good Thanksgiving. What is fexting? What is fexting? Somebody sent me this article. Fexting. Fexting is fighting over text instead of, in person. Arguments can range from low-level discussions like, babe, you left your towel on the floor again. Sounds like something I would say. Babe, you left the drawer open again. It's sort of passive aggressive. To issues more serious like mean or rude messages, short texts, like one or two word replies. I love doing that. Got it. That's what I like to write. Got it. No problem. Extra long messages, or people love to send paragraphs. That's what I call running the light. Harsh language, or one person ignoring the other on purpose, leaving that person on read. Or response is in all caps. One or both people also might also start responding using emojis. I do not allow emojis in my communication. I've never used one. I'm looking into the camera. I've never used an emoji. Never. I never will. And I don't allow them. My mom sends them sometimes. I allow her. That's it. No emojis. I'm not a caveman. I'm close to it, but I'm not. I don't allow emojis. But fexting, fighting over text, it's ruining our relationships. And this person said it well. Where is this person? One of the biggest, and by the way, the article I was reading from before is from Men's Health, written by a woman. And why am I quoting Men's Health? Because the person sent me this article that was in a publication that had a paywall, and I couldn't print it out. I couldn't even continue reading. But Men's Health, thank you, gets a plug because they let me read it without it paying for it. One of the biggest contributors to argument and conflict between others is ineffective communication, says Alex Honigman, a licensed clinical social worker and relationship expert. He said, I think it's a he, maybe it's a woman, sorry, Alex, where we may feel that text would be an appropriate way to gather our thoughts, they lack the nuances and subtleties of face-to-face interactions or even phone calls have. Without vocal tone, facial expressions or body language, the intended emotions or context behind the message is frequently misinterpreted. Honigman continues, this happens to me all the time. By the way, I'm misinterpreted even when I'm speaking directly to a person or right in front of a person. I, in my head, sometimes it feels very soft and then it comes out not so soft. And, yeah, I feel like I should just communicate less because I get misinterpreted. People misread me all the time. How fighting over text can be harmful. Back to the Men's Health article. As you've probably gathered, this practice can also have downsides. For instance, you can miss social cues, just all that stuff and stuff. The nuance. Texting does not have nuance. I think the problem is, let me go over some of the benefits because Dr. Linglam said this. Arguing via text can help some people in certain situations. That's partly because disagreements are not necessarily problematic. Fighting is such an important part of a healthy relationship. Now, I didn't know this. I hate fighting. I'm sick of fighting. I want a life with no to-do list and no fighting. I don't like conflict. I think there's way too much fighting in friendships and relationships, and people just need to let shit go. Most things aren't worth arguing about or just look beyond and go, that's a good person. That person didn't mean that. Fighting is such... This is what Dr. Linglam said. A relationship therapist and a lecturer at the Stanford Graduate School of Business in Santa Clara University. In a healthy relationship, the partners feel there is a safe space to be authentic. And part of fighting is about asserting and advocating and expressing. Fighting is actually about vulnerability because when I fight with you, I'm disclosing to you something that is important to me. Well, I disagree. I think that it is important to set boundaries and some fighting, but there is way too much discussing going on, way too much texting. If you're in a relationship, you are tethered to your phone. That person, maybe they have your location. They always want to know where you are. You're expected to respond to text right away. And if you're busy doing something and you just write like a, got it, that could come across as dismissive. We're just communicating too much. I suggest using the voice memos where you speak into the, and you use your actual voice. But even then, so much doesn't need to be discussed. I think relationships are burdened and exhausting because we communicate too much. Not everything needs to be discussed. Not everything needs to be updated. In fact, the reason I started doing a podcast was because I felt like I had something to say and I kept telling many people. So I thought, wow, instead of calling everybody and telling them, gee, I just saw somebody at the airport filling up 50 water bottles. I'm going to just do a podcast and I'll let everybody tune in and listen. Well, here's the problem with podcasts. People ask me, what's wrong with podcasts? Well, what's wrong with Orny Adams is going to tell you. There's too many. There's way too much content. Go on TikTok. It's absurd. Nothing seems interesting to me. I'm completely flattened. My excitement is flattened. I've flatlined. Nothing excites me in the content world anymore. And I'm sure you're the same way. So to me, imagine being somebody who makes a living creating content. And I have to outpace that. It's exhausting. And it's intimidating. And it's scary. Because I go on TikTok. I go on Instagram. I go on YouTube. And I think, why would anybody watch my stuff? Why? My stuff is... I'm going to talk about carving a turkey in a video. Or let's say I put up a video from this podcast about to-do lists. You think if I put on the video, what's wrong with to-do lists? You think that's going to grab anybody? You think anybody's going to care? No, I can tell you nobody cares. Nobody wants to see a middle-aged man talking about this shit. Very few people. Very few people. And it's a shame because when I'm on stage, it seems to work. But now that we carry a filming device with us at all times, and there's so much content out there, it's almost impossible. And it's intimidating, and it's scary. And as you get older, which I'm doing, and I suspect you're doing as well, I feel like we're all getting older. Bob Dylan said, he not busy being born is busy dying. The problem is, as you get older, you fear being irrelevant. You fear, you know, like let's take Sirius Radio. They play my comedy. Well, I've noticed in the last couple of months, they're playing it less and less and less. And I start thinking, am I not relevant anymore? Do they not see me as a relevant comedian? Have I aged out? And it's scary. And you feel like that all the time. You see what people gravitate towards. And that's really what's wrong. There's just technology. It's everywhere. In New York City, they want to install noise cameras. Okay? We're being watched all the... You're being watched right now. If you come on my house, you're being watched. Like, there's cameras everywhere in life. And now they want to monitor our sound, which I'm all for. Because, you know, on this podcast, half the time I'm yelling at the leaf blowers. I'm like, the leaf blowers. And it's hypocritical because somebody uses a leaf blower on my property. But the cars going up and down the street with loud mufflers and the loud music, it's... And I know I sound like an old person, and here's a great way to make yourself sound even older. You start saying things like, this is what my tax dollars are going to? Where's the enforcement? But in New York City, they want to install noise cameras. More than 50,000 noise complaints, are filed every year by New Yorkers who have become fed up with the commotion. According to a spokesman for the city's Department of Environmental Protection, as of late last month, the city had issued 218 violations to drivers of vehicles with modified mufflers and 147 violations to drivers who were excessively honking. That doesn't sound like a lot of write-ups to me. That seems like it's just over like 325. That's not a lot for 50,000 complaints. The honking and the modified mufflers, it's got to go. Nobody cares how loud your car can get. You know all these houses you're blowing by? People live there. Now, this isn't motorcycles. I get motorcycles. Loud pipes save lives. I get that. Back to this article. The news generated by vehicles, including cars with modified mufflers, loud motorcycles, drivers who honk excessively, accounts for only a small fraction of those complaints. The cameras are activated when they record a sound level of 85 decibels or higher, which is me whispering. I can't go to New York anymore because they have sound cameras. They have noise cameras. and they are increasingly being used by the Department of Environmental Protection to ticket drivers. And now it's going to the city council, is expected to vote on a bill this week. And then there's this woman. Where is she? Okay. Few people have done more to try and turn down the city's volume than Mrs. Bronzaft, 87. She has been advising mayors, subway administrators, and other officials since the 1970s, when she completed a widely publicized study that determined that school children in classrooms next to train tracks performed worse than those in quieter classrooms. Well, you know, I studied philosophy and how to attack any study like this. And the first thing I would say is, well, maybe classrooms that are near train tracks are neighborhoods that maybe learning is not a priority. I'm trying to be as careful as possible, but maybe, you know, there are some communities that do better with education than other ones. Sitting in her noise room, this is Mrs. Bronzaft, an office inside her Upper East Side apartment where she keeps decades worth of research, she said noise cameras could be an effective way to reduce New Yorkers' stress and help them sleep. So, yeah, we're all stressed. Nobody's sleeping. How are you sleeping? Because I'm not sleeping that well. And even last night where I slept 6-7 hours, I wake up thinking I want more sleep. I've had trouble sleeping my whole life, but it seems to be getting worse. It seems to be getting worse. The stress keeps growing. And when stress grows, I don't sleep. I look tired. I eat more to compensate. I'm unraveling. I wish I could live two lives simultaneously. I'd love to know what it would be like to be a younger person, someone in their 20s who experienced COVID during their late teens. And I'd like to be able to compare it to the life I've lived as somebody in their 20s, because there's two wars going on right now. And I remember being in college when there was a war and not really caring. I remember hearing about inflation in college and not caring. I remember when the stock market crashed because of the loans, the home loans, and not caring. I wonder if that's gone. The carefreeness of youth, is it gone? Has the world indeed gotten worse? That's what I'd like to know. And there's a lot of people that are fed up and they go off the grid. And I want to talk about this documentary. My sister, my little sister, she said, you got to see this documentary. There's two. There's two. One's called The Garden. I go, what's that about? She said, oh, it's people living off the grid. I love off the grid. I love preppers. They actually crack me up. And I'll tell you why. I don't think the world's ever going to end. I've heard about this my entire life. I don't want to do my act because I talk about this in my act. But the world's not going to end. We've heard about this since the beginning of time. Doesn't the Bible talk about this? The apocalypse? So I get a kick out of preppers. But some of them are dangerous. So this is a documentary about preppers. And then I watched another one called Love Has Won. And this one, it's sad. Everybody seems to be looking for something. Everybody wants to belong to a group. And Love Has Won explores what is a cult? Is it a cult? I think a lot of us are living in cults and we don't even know it. Your job might be a cult. Your marriage might be a cult. To me, a cult is somebody who brainwashes you. Oh, and by the way, before I get too far, I was just talking about the noise cameras in New York City. I want to thank Arlo. Arlo cameras, they sent me a bunch of these and they're amazing, these cameras. Let's see if I can get it to record right now. I'm thinking they sent it to me to protect, have cameras here in my studio, my Shasta, and the quality is amazing. I've owned Arlo's before, and these are the newest ones, and it is so much better. So I want to thank you. Thank you, Arlo, for sending me these cameras. I'm thinking of putting some up here and actually just having like more angles with my Arlos. But I appreciate it. And what I like about the new ones, they don't have to connect through a hub. They're just independent. They connect directly to the wireless. And that, to me, is an upgrade. All right, now, let's get back to the cults. So, these people living off the grid. There's the off-the-grid cult, and then there's the other cult. What amazes me, and so I thought, what is a cult? To me, a cult is brainwashing. They ask for your money. They make it difficult to leave. They cut you off from your family. So in the Garden, which is a community of people living off the grid, I didn't necessarily feel that. But this documentary was exploring, is this a cult? And it was too produced. I got to be honest with you, they treated it like a reality show. I think they cast people to go in and infiltrate the group and become part of it and the report back. I don't know how many times in the documentary I had to hear, I'm here to see if this is a cult or is this a cult? Like, I heard the word cult too much. These people, although they're quirky and they fight and they naturally have a leader, I think there's always going to be a leader, right? When there's a group of people, there's always some leader. And again, I only know what the documentary showed me. But they put people in there. You know, one guy was like a prepper, a couple of prepper guys, ex-military guy, and then some young woman who was into eyelashes and fake nails and had never been camping. I go, all right, this is cast. And she was out of California, out of Los Angeles. I go, this is cast. Now we're just putting people in there. And I would have appreciated if the documentary really covered this group like a documentary, like not get involved. It felt like a producer's hand was really, really in there. Because I enjoy people that want to just get away. Now, I'm not talking about the people that are starting militias, but, you know, a sense part of me would love to get like a cabin in the woods and just be off the grid, not be checking my phone, not be thinking about my to-do list. Like, that to me appeals to me. Now, I'll tell you what doesn't appeal to me is not having running water, not having electricity, not having, like, I think you can be off the grid and have this stuff, electricity, running water. Even though electricity is part of a grid. But I just want to be off the emotional grid. I want to be off the social media grid. I want to stop hearing about conflict all over the world. I want to have localized problems. I want to have what's happening around me. You know, maybe I have a problem with a neighbor. Maybe loud noises in the street. Maybe a helicopter going over right now. I want localized. Maybe I have moles. I want my own problems. I feel like I'm taking on the burden of the world's problems. How many wars do I have to live through? Now, if I grew up in a small town, Lexington, Massachusetts, I've got the mug right here, and I only knew what was happening around me. I miss those days. I miss it. What fascinates me about these groups is how they sway people, how they get them to join, how they commit. I can't get somebody to just edit this podcast. I can't get a video editor. When I leave here, I have to go video edit myself. You know, I got Ernesto to do the audio. I hope he didn't get back to me. Now I got another to-do. Get Ernesto. So this other documentary, this is one I really want to talk about. This one's called Love Has Won. And this woman, Leslie, I believe her name is Leslie. I'm going to read the what I read in Rolling Stone because they said it perfectly. And these documentaries, they have these like these hippie, lot of attractive women. I'm waiting for somebody I dated to show up in one of these cult documentaries. That's what I think is going to happen. I go, eventually, one person I dated will be in there. I've seen women I've dated like on dating shows, you know, like bachelor type shows, but never a cult. That'd be confirmation. That'd be validation. Like, because when I go, there's something wrong with her, I'd be like, yeah, there was. Yeah, there was. Because this, listen to this, Doc. Ready? Where's page 3? A lot of notes today, everybody. Going to page 3. Okay? The leader, Amy Carlson, she grew up like in the middle of maybe like Kansas, I think. She worked at McDonald's. Next thing you know, she declares she's Mother God and everyone believes it. Now, how that happens, I don't know. I don't know how you get your first follower. I've declared I'm great at stand-up comedy. Nobody's listened to me. I'd like a following like this. I said, these people sit there and they use social media. They do podcasts. Guess what I'm doing? Podcast. I don't have a cult-like following. But this woman works at McDonald's in the management program. And somehow, one day she declares she's Mother God and people just buy into it. It's remarkable. I want to see how it starts from the, somebody do that documentary. From the first, I want to know follower number one. How did that person come along? How did it happen? I want to know scientifically, like when the sperm hits the egg and then creation begins. I want to see that. I want to know scientifically how you start it, how you get your first fall. Because this woman, she had 3 kids. She got pregnant when she was 20. Then she abandoned her kids, left her kids with her mother. And she goes off, declares that she's Mother God, finds a guy, starts sleeping with him, says, oh, you're Father God. And then, by the way, she slept with, she had several Father Gods along the way. Father God was interchangeable. There we go. Look at LAPD at work. I hear the siren getting louder, getting closer to me. And thank God it's going away from me. You don't like when the siren stops and it's like, you know, next to you. Okay, so this is from Rolling Stone magazine. Because what happened was, and the documentary starts, they find her mummified body. They kept her once she was dead. And she had turned blue. Listen to this. This is from Rolling Stone. When Amy Carlson's mummified body was found in April 2021, it looked like a blue skeleton. It was also in a sleeping bag wrapped in Christmas lights. That's festive. Her followers in the Love Has One cult were apparently still waiting for the Galactics, a group of dead luminaries led by Robin Williams, to come pick her up in their spaceship. Somehow this never happened. Instead, the cops came. This cult believed they were getting messages from dead luminaries like Robin Williams, and... And she's still got followers. Like, am I not out there enough? Is that the problem? I need to be crazier to get people to follow me? She thought Robin will... They kept calling them the Galactics. And they'd run in the documentary, like, somebody would run into the room and go, oh, Mother God just got a message from Robin. Robin said... We should have hamburgers for dinner. I'm not kidding. Robin Williams from the grave is communicating with Leslie or Amy Carlson, Mother God, telling her what to eat for dinner. And this person got followers. This cult happened. This is shocking to me. Is this shocking to anybody else? And they, of course, needed to make money. So they did a podcast, and they generated money with the podcast. They generated by making products, including this stuff called colloidal silver, which was a drink. And they would drink this, and it would cure anything. Well, guess what? That's why Amy was blue when she was dead. She was drinking too much silver. And this is the best part about this cult. Amy was an alcoholic who basically drank herself to death. So every day she would drink, they'd smoke pot, they did drugs. In fact, I think she dropped acid or did something like that when she was working at McDonald's. And that's when she had the vision that she was Mother God and she never came back. And she would drink every single day to the point of, like, you know, passing out and smoke. And the last Father God guy was a meth head. They interviewed him. He was doing shots of Fireball, smoking what looked like pot. He was, you know, and this is their leader. And they would feed her alcohol every day and call it her medicine. And she drank herself to death. They watched this woman that they called Mother God, who they swore was a leader. They said, this is it. This woman is God. And when she dies, she is going to be picked up by a spaceship and taken away. And even when that didn't happen, they still believed she was Mother God. How do some people get their hooks in people? We see it in politics. We see it in our lives. Sometimes you say, wow, even relationships, you go, wow, why does she put up with that? Why does he put up with that? Why don't they see what we see? Why don't people see what we see? Now, the only good news about this group, Love is One, is it was a small group. Appeared to be less than 20 people, according to this documentary. So that was reassuring. But you end up feeling bad. Like, I feel bad for these people. Because clearly there's some mental illness here. That you think that Robin Williams is communicating with you from the dead. And that you should drink silver. And silver's a cure-all. So they're sitting there hawking this colloidal silver drink. It cures everything. It'll cure cancer. Meanwhile, their leader dies from drinking it and turns blue. All her organs shut down because of the alcoholism and the substance abuse. And they actually, this was fascinating. Sometimes the group would just be sitting around and someone would run in and go, Robin just said we need to move to Colorado. And I notice a lot of these groups are in Colorado or Oregon. A lot of Oregon in the beautiful property. Cults know how to pick beautiful properties. This one was in the Shasta Mountains in California. I'm like, wow, I should move there. But then I'm surrounded by this, silver drinkers. So the Galactics kept telling them to move. They moved several times. And eventually they ended up in, I can't remember where, but she died in a hotel, Amy. And she'd been dead like a couple of days. And the hotel staff started knocking, going, hey, what's going on in there? And eventually they moved her out in the middle of the night. So they moved the dead body back to like Colorado, I think. And finally the police came in and busted them. But they believe that the life I'm living is the 3D life. So if you go to the hospital, that's the 3D life. Letting a doctor, shouldn't go to the hospital. No, you drink silver until you end up decomposing in a bed somewhere in Colorado. That's what they think. They think that this is all an illusion. They live in the 5D life. The 5D life is seeing through illusion. By the way, I have friends that are this nuts, that believe in this stuff. And I tell that to their face. And they know it. So these people are out there. But I would recommend watching this one. And I hope that like another streamer, that's my favorite. It's like now it's like never enough. It's like, okay, that was on Max. That was good. Now let's see what Hulu. What does Hulu have to say about Love is One, this group? But these groups are everywhere. And it starts with conspiracy theories. They all believe in conspiracy theories. That there are these, you know, these bloodlines that are running the banks and that the conspiracies behind COVID or whatever. It's fascinating. I don't believe in conspiracy theories. I believe there's a lot of bad out there. And this is probably the problem with my cult, my to-do list cult. No to-do list. Is I don't believe in conspiracy theories. I want a utopian society. That's all I want. I want peace. I want less to do. I want to be bored. I used to be bored a lot more. I want to be bored. Well, I'm in Los Angeles, California. I can tell you the sun is out. It is gorgeous. It is December. It's gorgeous. Now, some of you are going to listen to this or watch this on YouTube in a few months and say, well, why are you saying it's December? It's April. And let me explain once again. That's because the video goes up on Patreon first. It will be on patreon.com/orny. You can subscribe for as little as $5 a month. And that's my pitch to you to support me. I appreciate that kind of support. But the audio will be up everywhere you get your audio tonight. so you can take a listen. That is for sure. I got to tell you before I get out of here about this guy who has been writing me letters, a lot of emails. I'm trying to get them on my podcast, but it's a little bit difficult, and you're going to see why when I read you the letter that he sent me. And I want to thank all the listeners and everyone who does support me. And again, I'll be at the Irvine Improv December 8th through 10th. And if you're listening to this, watching this on YouTube months later, I'll be at the Irvine Improv in December 2024. So you can come back. My tour schedule is ramping up. I'm trying not to go on tour too much. I'm trying to, do less and relax more in life. And so you won't see me touring as much. I'm just trying to, where's the sounds? Trying to get ready to wrap this up. Find out which theme I want to play out with. This is, and by the way, a lot of emails. And a lot of emails from people that seem like they could be in the Love Is One cult. I notice around the holidays, you get a lot of more interesting emails and correspondence. I appreciate all of them. One guy rewrote the theme for me and sent it to me on Patreon. He's a subscriber. And I played it this morning. I couldn't understand the lyrics. And I wanted to play it because I really appreciate anyone who wants to contribute to this podcast. I like it. This is an email from Jack. This is from Jack. Sent it into the email, whatswrong@ornyadams.com. He said, I've been watching some of your videos on YouTube and just saw your podcast. Too much to tell you in a short email. From what I've seen in you, you are someone I would like to meet and know. I am 99 years old. Been in show business as an entertainer for many years, from 9 years old, as a singer, impressionist, and doing comedy. One-man shows at the Palace Theater in New York, the Borscht Circuit, Lenny Bruce and his mother and daughter, a lifelong friend, Buddy Hackett, etc. I was in the Navy from 1943 to 1946, and I just know we were meant to get to know each other. Sounds like Jack has a cult. So I've been trying to get Jack on the podcast. I wanted to go to his home. He lives in Los Angeles. That hasn't happened. And I wanted to have him phone in today, but he's not feeling well. I think he has a flu. And I can imagine that's pretty scary when you're 99. So Jack, I really appreciate you listening. I want you to get better. And I want to have you on this podcast. I know, buddy. I know you have an interesting story. And I want you to share it. I want to know the perspective of a 99-year-old. I mean, it's just what an accomplishment. And we've sent a lot of correspondence back and forth, and he wants to sort of meet up first and feel comfortable, and I get that. But I also think it would be amazing to have our first conversation on tape. So think about it. Think about it. I know your daughter wants to come to my show. I'll be at the Ice House December 16th. December 8th through 10th, I will be at the Irvine Improv. In January, I will be in Chicago. I'm going to be in Michigan. I am going to be back at McCurdy's in Sarasota right after Valentine's Day. My tour schedule is up at ornyadams.com/tour. Check it out. And here's what I've decided. And I'll end on this. I think the world used to be a much more relaxing. Now, I'm not advocating smoking, but it seems back in the days when people smoked in restaurants and had cigars and martinis for lunch, it seemed more relaxed. We're too uptight now. We're spending too much time at the gym. And everybody has to be in shape. Can we go back to not everyone being in shape anymore? Everybody has to be in shape. And everybody is wearing yoga pants or workout. Everybody looks like they're going to the gym or they just came from the gym. And a lot of these people don't look like they're going to the gym. But everybody is dressing like they're just coming from the gym. And I wrote this down. Where is it? Where is it? Where's page one? Where's page one? I think anything with an elastic waistband, you shouldn't spend a majority of your life in. Now, full disclosure, I'm in sweatpants right now. But I want to go back to uniforms, school uniforms. I think we'll behave better. When people dress up, I go out for fancy dinners. I was out at a nice Italian restaurant on Saturday night. A guy was in a sweatsuit outfit. Come on, buddy. If you dress up, you feel better about yourself. I want to go back to that. I want to go back to people playing by the rules. People having respect for each other. People returning phone calls. People obeying the law. Okay? I know you can ride up and down the street with your loud mufflers and get away with it. This isn't about what you can get away with. Shoplifting, it's not what you can get away with. It's about if we're going to have civility and we're going to have a civilization, we got to start playing by the rules. I've always been a rules player. Even when I was a kid, I remember playing spin the bottle. I didn't like it. I didn't like it, and I'll tell you why. Because people would spin it, and if it pointed at somebody that they didn't like, they'd adjust it. Or if they like somebody, they just point at that person and try and sneak in a kiss. And I thought, why are we doing this? Why are we here? This is a game of chance. Maybe you get to kiss somebody you want to kiss. Maybe you have to kiss somebody you don't want to kiss. Maybe you get to kiss somebody completely out of your league. That's what spin the bottle is about. You can't break the rules and start pointing the bottle where you want to point it. I mean, that's not what we signed up for. Now pass me some more of the sparkling cider and let's do this right. What's wrong with Orny Adams? Episode 98. Thank
What's
you.
What's his name, Kev?
Orny.
Name's Orny.
Orny Adams.
Imagine that. People cheating at spin the bottle. Starts at an early age. I'd like to do a documentary about all those people that cheated and spin the bottle and where they ended up. I want to also do another documentary about all the kids that blew out those trick candles over and over again and didn't catch on that it was a trick when they kept relighting themselves. These are the dumbest kids in my growing up. I'd sit there and they blow out the candles. A second later, they come back up and the parents like, come on, blow it out again. Blow it. Do it again. It's a form of child abuse, first of all. And it exposes your kid as not being smart enough to understand that candles don't all relight themselves like that. Damn right, I'm fired up! What's wrong with Orny Adams 98? Thank you, everybody, for listening. Keep in touch. What's wrong at OrnyAdams.com. I have had enough, and now I get to leave this pleasant studio and be confronted by my to-do list, which I don't want it to don't. I want it to don't list. That something like that.